Maybe you've spent 20 years doing something else, but that something else has probably given you some really powerful people skills that will serve you as a financial planner.
Hey there, Dominique Henderson here. In this episode, Dr. Dave Yeske shares why becoming a CFP could be worth it for career changers and why he believes financial planning is here to stay as a profession. He and I also dive into the discussion of the cost of the journey in the form of the checks you might write and the time you might spend to help you determine if this will be a worthwhile career choice for you. Finally, he gives some really great insight for what a career changer should be looking for in a financial planning program. Look, making the decision to become a certified financial planner is not one to be taken lightly. It requires a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, and so much perseverance. So, my hope is that this episode gives you some things to think about. And if, by the way, it does, would you mind letting me know on the platform you're watching or listening on? You know, those likes, those shares, those comments, they prompt this platform or any other platform that you're listening on for that matter to put this content in front of others that may benefit from this. Okay, now for the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals. I'm Dominique, and today we are talking to the great Dr. Dave Yeske. Dave, you hold a doctorate in finance from Golden Gate University, as well as an MA in economics and a BS in applied economics from the University of San Francisco. And you've been practicing financial planning since 1990. I was still in high school, but I'm dating myself here. Let me not do that yet.
Or not dating yourself.
You are the past chair of the Financial Planning Association and have been named a top advisor by Bloomberg Wealth Manager. You've also been quoted in national media, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Business Week, Newsweek, USA Today, Investor Business Daily, San Francisco Chronicle, and the Journal of Financial Planning. You've also appeared on CBS, CNBC, CNN, and NBC News. Dave and the Yeske Buoy approach to investing were profiled in the Wall Street Journal in 2009 and again in 2010 on the Science of Financial Advising. In 2019, you were also recognized by Investment News as one of the most influential people in helping to shape the financial planning profession. You've also written a feature for articles in the research magazine, San Francisco Magazine, and the Journal of Retirement Planning. You co-author with Alyssa Buoy, CFP, Policy-Based Financial Planning Provides Touchstone in a Turbulent World, which was published in July 2006 in the Journal of Financial Planning. The Journal has also published your most recent collaboration, which is Evidence-Based Financial Planning to Learn, Like a CFP, which appeared in November, the 2011 issue. And the doctoral research that you've been doing was published in the Journal of Financial Planning in September 2010 under the title Finding the Planning in Financial Planning. Dr. Dave, you have contributed 13 chapters to the CFP Board's Financial Planning Competency Book, published by John Wiley Sons of April of 2013. You and Alyssa have also contributed a chapter called Policy-Based Financial Planning, Decision Rules for a Changing World, to Investor Behavior, the Psychology of Financial Planning and Investing, published in 2014 by Wiley Finance. In 2017 of October, you were awarded the prestigious P. Kemp Fane Jr. Award, which is the Financial Planning Profession Lifetime Achievement Award. Your contributions as a thought leader in the profession through your writing, presenting, and teaching, and your dedication to mentoring future generations of planners through your longtime role as mentor and dean of the FPA's residency program, your involvement at the Golden Gate University spanning more than two decades were highlighted as you received the award. You're also practitioner editor of the Journal of Financial Planning, and you sit on the Board of Trustees for the Foundation for Financial Planning. You also hold an appointment as Distinguished Adjunct Professor at Golden Gate, Ageno School of Business, where you are the director of the university's financial planning program, and you also co-teach the Capstone Cases in Financial Planning course with Alyssa. You've also served as the chair of the Financial Planning Association PAC in 2005 and 2006 and chaired FPA's Research Center team and its academic, doesn't really matter, right? So many credentials here, man. I mean, golly, I'm going to be here all day reading your bio, but I'm going to give you your flowers, man. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. I've been actually trying to finagle this for some time. And when I got to the theme of this season, which is talking about the profession of financial planning from the lens of more or less academia. I talked to a mutual friend, Sandra Davis, and she was like, "You got to get Dave on." So here you are. Here you are. And I'm really eager for the conversation.
Looking forward to it.
So this arc of the conversation, we'll start with this career changer dilemma. It is a long journey. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Having looked at all the, let's say, the twists and turns of your tenure along this path, I'm pretty sure you have a lot of great insight. But before we get to that, let's talk about how you started in the planning profession. What sparked your interest to go down this? Because it wasn't even really a planning profession per se when you were trucking down this path. What started you here?
So back in, I did have a bit of a circuitous path to find my way to financial planning. And along the way, I was managing general partner of a commercial mushroom farm, believe it or not, Pacific Coast Mushrooms Limited. We were growing and shipping 1 million pounds a year at our peak.
No context for if that's a lot or a little or.
Well, 1 million pounds a year of anything is a lot, I think. But
Fair enough.
But not profitably. But I'd been studying economics, and I ended up moving to the city, to San Francisco, and working on the options trading floor of the Pacific Stock Exchange, which was interesting, but not a place I wanted to build a career. And then I worked for an insurance company. I worked for the Paul Revere Insurance Group, and my job was to call on anyone who had a life and disability license. And, back in the 80s, that was everybody, including pretty much every CFP on the face of the earth. And not so much now. Many, many more financial planners are fee-only. But in any case, I was calling on insurance brokers, stock brokers, financial planners, and I found myself gravitating towards the financial planners, realizing that they had my dream job. And so in the late 80s, I started studying. I got my CFP, and literally the minute I got my CFP, I think it was May of 1990, I quit and opened my own office. And then I lived in terror for a few years trying to build a practice from scratch. But I never looked back. I always knew it was what I was meant to do. And, 32 years later, I have to say it's the most satisfying decision I've ever made in my life. To become a CFP, to become a financial planner, to practice financial planning.
What drew you to what you called, or what you were terming back then, your dream job? What characteristics? Because I'm pretty sure that those are similar to what some career changes are seeing right now, or what's drawing them.
Well, first of all, there was the technical dimension. There was the crunching numbers and developing strategies, and there was that intellectual dimension, but it also involved getting to know clients, getting to know their families, understanding who and what mattered to them and why, and then developing strategies in service to that. Mm-hmm. And then being able to be part of the process of seeing them realize their dreams over time. I mean, I have client relationships now that have been going for over 30 years, and I love that. And the thing about financial planning, people, human beings in general, so struggle with their relationship with money that to have a guide, to have a Sherpa, to take them through this, this terra incognita, this terrain they don't understand, really means a lot to them. And as a financial planner, it doesn't happen every minute or every day, but it kind of happens every week that someone is on the phone or sitting across the conference table looking at you and going, "My life is better because you're in it." And that's a pretty satisfying thing.
Yeah, you bring out a lot of points here. I'm trying to see what rabbit trail I want to hop down. I think this level of satisfaction. It's not totally altruistic because we do get paid for it, but at the same time, though, there is something about, and I explained it this way with one of my guests, is, you know, I have a son that's in basic training right now, and he's been calling home like every week that they give him phone privileges. And to hear his maturity as a man, knowing that I planted a lot of those seeds as his father, hearing that come back to me now by the conversations we're having is a very gratifying thing. And I make that akin to the work we do as financial planners, because as financial professionals, we are giving advice. We're throwing stuff out there all the time that may be heated or not. But then when people benefit from that, oh man, there's such a high that comes with that, that you're just like, it's just incomparable. And I think that's maybe what you're alluding to, the feeling that you're explaining.
No question. No question. I mean, the thing is that, I mean, you're right. We get paid for what we do. We all make a good living as financial planners, but we get to spend every day building relationships with people who become a part of our lives and we become a part of their lives. And, you know, Dick Wagner was one of the great philosophers of our profession. You know, he talks about financial planning as being, you know, he talks about money as being the greatest secular force on the planet. And it's true. And in his last book that he wrote, he published before his premature death, Financial Planning 3.0, he talks about the fact that money is mentioned more times in the Bible than God. I mean, that, you know, human beings have struggled forever with their relationship to money. And it's because money is the material means through which we interact with the material world. So of course it dominates all of our thinking. Who are the high priests of money? Honestly, it's financial planners. It's not economists. Economists view money in a very cold and honestly non-human way, even though the economy is in fact nothing more than the aggregate behavior of human beings. But financial planners understand money at an intimate level. They understand how money interacts with the lives of individuals. And that's a very special skill. You know, we are called upon to help people come to terms with money in their lives. No, and it's a really... Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's an important calling.
No, you're speaking to something that I think is, and I don't know if people will get offended at this, but it's very spiritual in a sense, because money is so spiritual. And even, you know, going on the tangent that you mentioned about the mention of money in the Bible as many times as it is. I mean, there's even a scripture where Jesus says that where your treasure is, your heart will be also, right? It's this tie that we can't get away from. And right. And I wonder what your thoughts are about, you know, when we think about this long journey that it takes if somebody wants to go be a certified financial planner, or even just a financial professional, what it takes to get there. Let's unpack some of those things, because that journey, everything you've been naming, everything I've been naming, has a cost, right? It has a write some checks cost, and it also has some other intangible things. And I wonder if you can kind of speak about that, because you have an interesting seat, you know, overseeing one of the really great programs in the nation. What are some of the things that you guys are teaching the career changers about that cost, and how are they absorbing that?
Well, gosh, you're such a great question, and it opens up such an amazing topic. The thing is, you can go to a program, you can go to a certificate program online. There are hundreds of them that will teach you minimally what it takes to pass the CFP exam. That's okay, but it's not the ideal. What we try and do at Golden Gate, and what a lot of programs across the nation do, you know, there are land-grant universities nationwide that are teaching these programs, that are teaching financial planning and have been for many, many, many years.
Okay, real quick. Have you had trouble finding resources during your journey to become a financial professional? I mean, have you wondered, is there somewhere I can just find all the information and, you know, the inside scoop that I need? If you've been wondering how to avoid all the pitfalls of bad advice, including wasted time and money, I want to invite you to join us in the Jumpstart community. What is the Jumpstart community, Dominique? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's a place where we're bringing together like-minded individuals who are dedicated not only to finding their place in financial services, but actually growing their careers and striving for greatness so that together we can change lives and become the superheroes of the financial services industry. Look, I know that's a big, big, big ask, but if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then make sure you visit us at www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. That's www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com, and we'd love to have you. Okay, now let's get back to the conversation.
And what we all try and do at our best is acculturate students into this profession, is to teach them not just the technical dimension, not just the minimum necessary to pass the exam, but help them understand what it means to be a financial planner, what it means to be in a helping profession, what it means to help individuals and families achieve their dreams, achieve their goals. You know, the thing is I would argue that all day long, that financial planning is the most important profession on the face of the earth. Because here's the thing, you know, when people think about a profession, what do they think about? They think about law and they think about medicine. And why do they think about that? Because there's been a million television shows built around the practice of medicine or built around the practice of law. And there have been no television shows that I'm aware of built around the practice of financial planning. And yet, vastly more people will be subject to a bad financial outcome than will ever be subject to a dread disease or a bad financial or a bad legal situation. You know, financial planners are the ones who can help people plan for educating their kids, care for aging parents, plan for a comfortable retirement, and take away the anxiety that the thought of money has in almost everyone's lives. Financial planners are the ones who can do that. Financial planners are the ones who can do that for everyone. I mean, this is the thing that is so powerful,
yeah,
is that we are the ones, as Dick says, you know, we're like the, I don't know what you want to call it, the pastors or the high priests of money. And money is the fundamental fact of everyone's life because it's how they survive. It's how they interact with the material world, and they don't understand it. And it's a source of stress and anxiety. And we can be the ones to mediate that.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I you know, just a little bit of a history lesson. I was born in 76. 2 years, 3 years before that, ERISA law came out, and I don't know if
you were born at the time I was graduating from high school. So
I don't know that a lot of people understand this, but you know, just in my study about pensions, is you know, largely the 401k came about as a way. One of the primary reasons was to get pension obligations off the balance sheets to make companies look more profitable, and people don't realize that that was actually at the expense of the consumer that uses the 401k as his vehicle, because financial literacy is not being taught in schools largely, and still not even largely. And here we are 40 something years later, and you go from, okay, I'm gonna work for a company for 20, 30, 40 years. I'm gonna get my gold watch and I'm gonna get my pension. I'm gonna be good to go, to no more pension. Here's your 401k, figure out what you need to do on your own. And although that is a small part of the financial plan, this is a part that causes a lot of angst and anxiety, to your point. And so we as professionals can sit in that sacred seat of guide. I love that, to help people navigate something that they would otherwise have a lot of stress and consternation around that. And I think, you know, when I talk to career changers and they're thinking about this career path, they do tend to concentrate really myopically on that investment side and the number side. Maybe give some advice to having that career changer focus on things that they may have brought from another part of their life as a parent, as a, you know, some other vocation, as a spouse, all these tools that could be used in this profession as sitting in that secret seat.
No, you know what? First of all, yes, you bring up something really important. It's not just about money. It's not just about investing. It's about human behavior. It's about relationships. I was one of three editors on a book that just came out from CFP Board, The Psychology of Financial Planning, because CFP Board, as of last year, actually added the psychology of financial planning as a knowledge domain for CFP study, appropriately so. And I would say they're a little behind the curve, but that's their job. It's actually their job to be behind the curve. CFP Board comes along and they kind of hoover up what financial planners are actually doing, and then they codify it and it becomes part of the exam. And so financial planners have been recognizing the role of psychology for a long time. And it's actually the biggest part of the job. Mm. I mean, I like to say that the quantitative part of what we do is honestly the easy part. It's various applications of time value of money concepts, but change is hard. Change is hard. I was on a panel a few years ago, an FPA annual conference panel, managing income in retirement or managing something in retirement. But I had a fellow panelist who was getting way down into the weeds talking about some obscure technique that would add 2 basis points to returns or something. And at some point when I let him finish, and then I turned to the moderator. I said, "Bob, can I poll the audience?" And there were like 600 financial planners in the room. Okay. And I said, by a show of hands, how many of you have had a client's retirement plan blow up because of market behavior? Not one hand went up. Now you can see where this is going. And I said, by a show of hands, how many of you have had a client's retirement plan blow up because of client behavior? Every hand in the room went up. So the reality is that the technical part of what we learn to become CFPs is important. It is necessary. It must be part of who we are and how we think. But it's not the most important part. It's not the most difficult part. Understanding human behavior, understanding psychology, being able to be a change agent. This is the thing that makes us different than other professionals. We understand the human dimension. We understand that we're in a relationship that is going to require us to help people come to terms with something that they have spent their entire life being afraid of. And this is where, for example, you talked about Sandra Davis at the beginning of this podcast. And Sandra and Rick Kaler and Elizabeth Chiton and Elisa Bowie, they're all part of a program at GGU that focuses on the human dimension, that focuses on the psychological dimension, the behavioral dimension. You know, we were one of the first programs ever to offer a concentration in financial life planning, which includes psychology and behavior and all the rest, because we recognize that this is actually the future of financial planning.
Yeah.
We're not going to abandon all of our quantitative skills. We must have those in order to practice financial planning. But we must also have the behavioral skills, the psychological skills, in order to be effective financial planners.
Yeah, and I would say in spades, there's two thoughts that jump to mind. I know early in my career, I was brought up to speed with the findings of the Dalbar study. And for those that are listening, this is a study that comes out every year and basically highlights suboptimal investor behavior is the best way to say it.
Well, and, which is, you know, all investor behavior is suboptimal, it turns out.
Pretty much. That's what it shows. I mean, if the market is characteristically doing 7 or 8, and how do people end up making 30 or 40 or 50% of that number? It's through behavior. And I think it highlighted a couple of things for me. I think the biggest takeaway, aside from knowing that humans will do what they want to do, even if it's not in their best interest, was my job as a planner, as a professional, if I want to make a difference in the lives of my clients, was I was going to have to gain their trust at a level that they would heed the recommendations that I gave them, the advice. They would value my position in their life as their advisor so much so that they would, you know, even if it came down to just the basis level of, well, Dominique said not to do that, or Dominique said to do that. And I think that's what it's all about. I think it's about building a level of trust so much so that your client realizes that it's almost like, you know, taking your medicine, the cod liver oil or something like that. You know, you're taking it, even though you know that this is, it doesn't taste the best, but you know, I'm doing this for the sake of my best interest. And I wonder what your thoughts are around as far as that establishing that trust for the relationship to flourish. And before you answer that, because what I would argue too is, although the technical is important, what we have is this automation and digitization that's happening that's making that job a whole lot easier and a whole lot more manageable than it has been, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so we can concentrate more on the relationship. How do people build that trust so they can flourish?
Oh, Dominique, I've got like 1,000 things to say about this. But first of all, because so much of what we do, if we're really being effective, involves the human dimension, you can never robo financial planning. You can never robo us away. It just won't happen because we are evolved through millions of years of evolution. We are evolved to work in relationship with others. You know, it's why we have workout buddies. It's why we have personal trainers. It's why we have life coaches. You know, it's like we do our best work with other human beings. And so financial planners, if they're doing financial planning, if they're doing real financial planning and they're doing it right, they will never be roboed away. It's not possible. But you bring up trust. You used that word several times, and I think that's really important because there is this concept of client trust and relationship commitment that's been the source of a lot of research. And first of all, client trust and relationship commitment is a very important, it's a very important factor because it's been shown that clients who have a high degree of trust and commitment have a higher propensity to share personal and financial information with their advisor. They have a higher propensity to act on recommendations from their financial planner. They have what's known as functional conflict, which means if conflicts do arise, they tend to get resolved. And honestly, even though this is not a financial planning thing, it's more of a business development thing, they have a higher propensity to make referrals. So client trust and relationship commitment is a very valuable thing it's a very powerful thing to focus on. And here's what a number of research initiatives have shown that leads to trust and commitment. First of all, clients want to see that the recommendations you make are not generic. They want to see that they're directly related to who and what matters to them. And they actually want you to wade into difficult and fraught conversations about money. I mean, emotional conversations about money, which is, you know, a lot of conversations about money are emotional. You know, it really activates all kinds of stuff in our lives. They want you to wade into that. They want you to wade into when they say, you know, my sister is asking me for money and I'm not comfortable giving it to her. They want you to wade into that conversation. They want it. They don't want you to like shy away from it and say, oh, no, that sounds kind of like scary. They want that. So they want you to make recommendations that are directly related to who and what matters to them. They want you to wade into difficult conversations about money. They want you to talk about life transitions. They want you to be the one to say, you're approaching retirement. Let's talk about how you're going to meet your spending needs in retirement. Or it looks like your kids are reaching college age. What are we going to do about sending them to college and paying for it? They want you to engage in all of those conversations. They want that. And so and that will generate more trust and commitment.
What if I were to tell you that you could spend 2 days with a veteran of the financial services industry that has connections with dozens of firm owners and has also answered hundreds of questions about making the leap into a career as a financial professional. What if I were also to tell you that you could do this from the comfort of your laptop in an interactive virtual environment with a group of like-minded peers? Are you interested? You should be. I'd love for you to experience all of this, and you can when you register for the Career Changer Challenge happening October 29th and 30th. Now, during this time, I'm going to share with you the key elements on how to successfully navigate your journey from wherever you are currently, that's right, wherever you are currently, into a career in financial services. Look, my goal in the challenge is to help you find your place in this wonderful industry called financial services. No matter if you want to be a financial coach or a financial advisor, I just want to help you figure it out. And if you're not satisfied after attending the challenge, I'm going to give you your money back. So you have nothing to lose. All you need to do is go to www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. And when you get there, click on the video that has my handsome mug on it. There's a lot on there, but the one that has my handsome mug that says, click on the register for the next challenge button. And join me so I can share with you all the secrets to save both time and money when making the leap as a career changer. Okay, let's get back to the conversation.
So anyway, it's like, it's all about trust and commitment, and it's all about being willing to be there in the difficult conversations.
I love the way that you put that, because that they want you to, which I've been knowing it for a while. I've been a part of some of these discussions, debates, between the talking heads about, you know, what's the value of financial planning in the profession with the automation and technology. And I had a conversation some years back with Calvin Williams, who's got one of the first black-owned robo-advisors. And we had this conversation. He was like, you know, digitization and technology and automation is there to help facilitate the tasks that are mundane and routine for the advisor to spend more time in the relationship. And this is a computer scientist saying this. And so, you know, financial planning is here to stay for those that have questioned that. Here's a question, though, for you. What would you say, and maybe you can go to some of the syllabi that you guys have put together over the years. What would you say are maybe three things that universally all career changers could think about before making the switch? If somebody's watching this, or they're on my YouTube channel, or they're just looking at financial planning, they're scrolling through and they've seen these 300 certificate programs. Oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. Like, where should I go? Should I get the guaranteed to pass and yada, yada, yada? You know, they're all on this path. What should they be thinking about before they make that decision about what program they get? Because I think there's some pre-work that we're hinting around that they probably need to do.
So that's such a great question. And obviously this could be a moment for me to just like pitch GGU and, you know, Golden Gate University is wonderful. And I don't need to pitch it, because I'm going to say, there are hundreds of certificate programs. There are hundreds of degree programs. And the thing I would encourage anyone to do is go somewhere that will help acculturate you, that will help introduce you to the profession of financial planning. And I'm not going to name names, but there are some certificate programs out there that are just like hopped up exam preps.
You call them, you know, skinny programs. I love that term.
They're just skinny programs. They're just meant to like get you past the exam. And you know what? That's not enough. You, if you're a career changer, you need to be acculturated. You need to be brought into this professional mindset of financial planning, that we, you know, we are a community. We're a community of practitioners who are out there doing good. We're out there doing something special, and you want to be part of that community. And therefore, you know, now I am going to name names. You know, it's like go to Texas Tech, go to Kansas State, go to Virginia Tech, go to Georgia, go to, you know, go to UGA, go to Utah Valley University, there are some programs out there that are serious about financial planning and about acculturating you and bringing you into the profession, not just like helping you pass an exam, but literally bringing you into the profession. Because a profession, you know what? Think about the word profession. The word profession actually means making a statement, making a commitment, committing to something. And profession is what you want. And therefore, you really have to be somewhere where it's not just about passing the CFP exam. That's a minimum necessary condition. That is the gold standard. You have to pass the CFP exam. Don't think you're going to be a financial planner without being a CFP, okay? Just don't. But don't think just passing the exam is all that's necessary. I will actually admit, I will confess that 32, 33 years ago when I was preparing to enter this profession, I was thinking about starting a business, and I had like a checklist, you know, I had my checklist, and it was like, okay, got to get registered to do this. Got to get registered with the SEC. Got to get registered with the state. Got to rent an office. Got to start a corporation. Got to blah, blah, blah. I had a checklist, and one of the checklists was got to have a credential. And then I actually started to study for the CFP. And somewhere along the way, studying for the CFP exam changed me and changed my perception of who I was going to be and what I was going to do. And I suddenly realized, no, I'm embarking on something bigger than what I originally thought.
Wow. Yeah.
And that bigger thing was going to really matter. It was going to make a difference for me and for my clients. I was going to make a difference in the world. And then, of course, you know, then I did all my volunteer work with FPA and was on the national board and met my future spouse and was president and chair. And now I'm on the foundation board. And I've done all this volunteer work because I had no choice.
Yeah.
Because I had no choice.
Yeah.
Once you get sucked in to this thing, once you start to believe that it matters, and it does, you can't help yourself. You get sucked in everywhere to trying to move this whole enterprise forward. Anyway, I'm not sure I even answered your question, but
no, but you bring up something about this level of acculturating or indoctrinating a career changer into the mindset of a planner. And I think about what we're trying to accomplish in the Jumpstart Coaching Lab, which is giving people not only just a preview of what this looks like to make sure they make the right decision, because I'm fully aware of the cost of opportunity cost. And for people to I tell this story, it's true. I never use her name, but I guess, you know, it's a female now. But I talked to somebody early in my consulting days on the Jumpstart side, and the conversation went something like, so what's your plan for getting into the industry? Well, it's like, I'm going to pass the CFP exam and people are going to see that I passed the CFP exam and they're going to give me a job. And I was like, well, it doesn't actually work like that. And so I started there and I go, I wonder how many people are getting caught up in the great marketing message that the CFP Board of Standards did with showing, you know, and getting public attention or awareness around the marks. Totally great. But let's not forget the focus. Let's not, you know, miss the, what they say, the forest for the trees, right? Let's see the big picture here. And what I attempted to start doing is showing people all the different ways you can contribute in this industry, whether you're sitting in front of a client or not, right? There's going to be so many different roles in here. And so I looked at that as kind of the career changer dilemma that I wanted to solve and help people realize, as an aspiring financial professional, these are some of the things you need to be thinking about, because there are so many, first of all, transferable skills that you have as a career changer, you know, whether you used to be a stay-at-home mom or, you know, in STEM professions or whatever, we're going to find out how we're going to resource all that kind of stuff and kind of salvage it into a skill stack that you can transfer into this profession.
Salvage it. I love it.
I don't believe in starting from scratch on some of these things. And I think that,
well, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just going to say, you know, the thing about career changers that is really powerful is that they have human skills. And human skills turn out to be the most important, not the only important skills for a financial planner, but the most important ones. Yes, if you don't already have numeracy, you need to figure out how to do time value of money calculations. You need to understand a little bit about how the tax code works. You need to understand a few, you need to have a handful of technical skills, but the most important skill is the human one. It's the ability to see human beings in their fullness and interact with them and connect with them and really have empathy for them.
Wow.
It's like if you can't love your client, if you have a client you can't love, you should let them go. They should find another financial planner.
As an aspiring financial professional or career changer, I understand you have a lot on your plate, right? If you're not in classes or studying for a licensing exam or listening to a really cool podcast or attending a conference, you're always doing something, trying to better yourself on this journey, right? Have you ever thought, I really wish there was a place I could be understood, a place where I could find my tribe and kind of talk about all the things that are going on with me during this journey? Well, there is such a place, my friend. It is the Jumpstart Community Roundup. Twice a month, you get the opportunity to share your wins, your losses, and basically whatever you need help with. It's a chance to kind of get encouragement and find accountability on your journey. And this is all included in your membership to the Jumpstart Community. All you have to do is visit www.jumpstartcoachinglab for more information and to sign up. We'd love to hear your story and have you join us in this wonderful community of aspiring financial professionals. Okay, let's get back to the conversation now. If you have a client that you can't love, you have a client you can't serve.
Mm-hmm.
I would go 100% that far to say that.
No, Dominique, I completely agree. 100% true. So, but this is the power of the career changer. If you're a career changer, you know, maybe you've spent 20 years doing something else, but that something else has probably given you some really powerful people skills that will serve you as a financial planner. Mm. Now supplement those with the technical skills you need. You know, go to GGU or Texas Tech or Kansas State or UGA or Virginia Tech, or go wherever you're going to go, get your technical skills, but the human skills you've accumulated over the last 20 years, they will serve you well as a financial planner.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Oh man. Yeah. I feel like I can go on and on and on. I want to bring this in for a landing. When you think about this, cause I know there's probably a lot of ways you can go. This is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. In that context, what word of wisdom or words of wisdom would you want to leave with them? You've left a lot of great ones. So if you felt like you've already outdone yourself to this, you know, to this point, but I'm pretty sure there's more left in the tank. So go for it.
You know, I would say two things. It's really important that we recognize the importance of the role of science in what we do as financial planners. Embrace evidence-based approaches. Embrace scientific approaches. If you're not already trained to do so, train yourself to recognize research-based writing and make that the foundation for how you practice.
Mm.
And the second part is recognize that you will not have all of those skills will be of no use unless you are able to engage with your clients as human beings, unless you have the skills to also recognize the behavioral piece, recognize that They are human beings with foibles and, you know, random behavior that's going to need to be managed around markets and the economy and the daily news cycle and all that stuff. And recognize and embrace that that's part of your role. That is part of your role, is to mediate and moderate their interaction with the world so that they don't make bad decisions in reaction to the stuff that's popping up on their phone screens or their computer screens on a daily basis. So you need to have a science-based foundation in the practices of financial planning, and you need to have a deep sympathy for the human dimension of what you're doing. And when I say sympathy, you choose that word carefully, because your clients will frustrate you. They will frustrate you every day. Approach them with empathy and sympathy and recognize that they're just doing their best. And it's your role to help them make good decisions in the face of the amygdala. You know, the amygdala is like the flight or fight. Oh my God. The amygdala is the fight or flight part of our brain. And it makes us want to take action. And sometimes not taking action is the best thing to do.
Benign neglect, as Warren Buffett says, benign neglect.
Benign neglect. I love that. I have clients who call me up and they're like, oh, something crazy is going on in the world. Tell me what I should do. And I will talk to them and they'll say, I knew you were going to say that. I just needed to hear you say it. Yeah. I knew you were going to say that. I just needed to hear you say it.
Yeah.
So be prepared. You're going to be the one. You're going to be the whisperer. You're going to be the money whisperer, right? I mean, that's your role. That's the job.
I love that. Maybe we'll be inspired to go watch some Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, out here to kind of see how we do that. That's great. Man, I love this. Dave Yeske, man, such a rich deposit. I really appreciate you spending the time to speak to the younger generation. I know you get to do that at GGU, but taking the time out to do this for Jumpstart, really appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. Truly my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Let's stay in touch, my friend.
All right, let's do it.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.